And now, the Dave Kimchin Show.
I just wish everyone listening to this would just... It's extremely painful, and I feel angry every day that, like, my life as it was taken from me and from all other Ukrainians. We had our lives, like, better or worse, but we were, like, people... I was deciding on what I want to do in my life. And now I can't go for a run. I cannot see my son. I cannot see my boyfriend. I cannot do anything. I can get my hair done, which is stupid, but still, like I cannot get my hair done because no, like, nothing is functioning here in Kiev. So my life as it was... I'm not living in my apartment after all. So my life as it was, like in 3 weeks, is just completely gone. And that is unacceptable. This cannot be happening. This is extremely scary and frustrating and makes people angry more and more. Like he has no right just to destroy or change the lives of 40 million people just because one crazy guy in Kremlin decided to do so. And also the world shouldn't be just looking at this and saying, like, oh, we don't want to escalate.
Betsina Sufzin, she's a member of parliament in Ukraine. She's back on the show joining us to talk about the horrible things that she's seen and the worsening conditions as Russia's aggression against Ukraine continues. Let's get right to that interview now. We will talk about the journalist who was tragically killed there. That news is making headlines and so much more also. So we'll get right to that. Inna Sufzin joining us now, member of parliament. I know it's been every day's busy for you. I've been watching your Twitter feed. I mean, obviously some horrible developments as Russian forces look like they're closing in on Kyiv. There's been terrible activity in Lviv and so much more. Just tell me what you're seeing right now and kind of what you know as you've been handling things from a government perspective.
Well, the situation here on the ground is complicated, but also very diverse. So we cannot say that there is a clear trend, like the Russians are taking over or the Ukrainian side is taking over, because that really depends on the specific kind of areas that you talk about. Of course, the Russians still have the superiority in the sky, and they're using it to the best of their ability and the best they can come up with. So morning attack on the Lviv military base was devastating, and 35 people dead in one bomb drop. That is a lot. That is the biggest one that we have had so far. But on the other hand, we did hear about to the south, where 600 Russian soldiers have been destroyed by the Ukrainians in the battle. So that is giving us hope. That is, showed that the Ukrainian army is extremely strong on the ground, and we can be winning on the ground. The situation in around Kyiv is again complex, because the Russians have been trying to get to the city from northeast. They have been pushed further from the city in that direction. They are still holding strongholds on the northwest and west, but they were not able to get to the city from the northeast. So that is again giving us hope. Of course, the Russians not being able to complete their military strategy, they're reserving to the worst case scenario, which is terrorizing the civilians. And that is, of course, just terrifying. Just 2 hours ago, I think the mayor of Mariupol announced that the recent death toll in Mariupol is 2,200 in the 2 weeks, 2,200 people dead because of the shelling, air strikes, hunger, dehydration. People don't have any heat, don't have any electricity. So the situation in Mariupol is just a catastrophe. It's just so terrible. On the east, there are fightings. There is no clear pattern, like who's winning or not. We did manage to take over some of the cities that they have previously taken, but again, it's diverse. So I would say that here on the ground, the situation is just complex, and you cannot get a clear like trend. So that does give us hope. But then of course some of the news, and particularly their prevalence and their superiority on the air, is the most painful, and is leading to the most painful results for us.
Yeah, we've seen also the death of an American journalist, a filmmaker, Brent Renold. That's also a tragedy. And I mean, I'm reading about people in Mariupol who are freezing, as you said, because of the lack of heat. And I mean, just so many, spots across the country of just really dire situations at this point.
I will shortly comment on the death of the journalist. He was apparently filming what was happening around Irpin, which is northwest of Kyiv. So they were trying to film the evacuation, which has been, failing, and then, more or less successful. Well, the whole week, this was the whole story of how people were trying to run away from Irpin. And he was trying to film that. And apparently they just opened fire on his car. And he was shot dead, and another journalist, apparently they were working together from what I understand, he was shot as well, but he's being treated in the hospital right now. So that is the situation as it is. We do hope that this will lead to a stronger action from the West, because actually, like, both the death of the murder of this journalist, who's an American citizen, and the attack on Lviv military base, there were all attacks on foreigners here in Ukraine, because Lviv military base, like in Novoyavorsk, in Lviv region, it is being used for training of the foreigners. It was one of the biggest training bases where training exercises were conducted with international instructors and so on and so forth. And the Russians did say directly that they were targeting international representatives here in Ukraine. They did say it openly. So this is their goal right now, because apparently they cannot, I've heard one of the, someone from the President Biden administration saying that the attack on Lviv region was the sign of Putin's frustration that he cannot win. So he decided, okay, I'm going to show you. So he attacked the base, which was a desperate move on his side, because the base is like 20 kilometers to the Polish border. And then that's like 15 miles, 14, yeah, more like that. So that's really close. So that was like really close. And their missiles are not as precise. So they could have easily hit the Polish border. That could have happened. But they are going into that extreme cruelty, and that is something we are seeing. On the other hand, we are also seeing many people who are refusing to get engaged in the war directly. There are many, how do you call that in English, when people refuse to go to battle?
Conscientious objector, I think. A conscientious objector, I want to say. I think that's the term where it used when they refuse to, when they don't want to fight, right? Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah. We are hearing deserter. Can that be the word as well? We are getting more information about more Russian soldiers just refusing to get into the battle. Which is again given us hope. We have seen this very strange video of a Russian soldier who was chained to the tree, and apparently his command chained him to the tree so that he does not run away. Mm. And he ended up freezing next to that tree, like he died. So, but he couldn't run away because he was chained with to his leg. His leg was chained to the tree. So I think the morale situation in the Russian army is declining. It was never very high, but it's declining. And then that is why they are also going for those desperate moves, like let's invite Syrians to come here and fight. Mm. Just like another level of craziness and just showing how, to what extent Putin is just led by his hatred in this war.
Yeah. Given the situation, the murder of the U.S. journalist, and also, as you said, this attack very close to the Polish border, just tell me more. You touched on it, but just, I mean, how much of a game changer you think this can be in terms of the West getting more involved in this. I know you touched on it, but just kind of if we can unpack that just a little bit more.
I really hope they would. I really hope, because for me, it now seems like the Western leaders are in denial. They're denying the level of threat. It is scary. I know that the threat itself is scary. It's, trust me, we're living through this every single minute. But they just have to accept that this is the reality. It is a scary reality, but just denying it doesn't do the job. And I think the West now needs to realize as well that every time the West is saying like, oh, we don't want to do this so because we don't want to escalate, Putin reads it very simply. I can go further. Like, look, he attacked Georgia in 2008. He didn't get the consequences. He annexed Crimea in 2014. Well, he got some sanctions, but not nearly what he should have gotten. Every time he's not getting punished by the international community enough, he's going further. And right now, we are not only those attacks on the American soldier, the murder of the American soldier, the attack on the base used for international training in Lviv, but also we are hearing on Russian television, the Russian propagandists saying things like, and I quote, who says we should respect any borders at all? Yes, we should go to Poland next. Yes, Lithuania will not be difficult to conquer. And stuff like that. And I'm quoting like them speaking on Russian television right now. They're speaking very openly that they are not going to stop in Ukraine if they take over and devastate the whole land and kill like 30 million of people who are living here, who are still here. So it's a scary truth, but the West needs to accept it and also needs to learn from its lessons. Every time Putin is not punished, he's seeing it as a way I can go further. And I really hope that this will be like right now, there should be some point where the West would say like, okay, that is too much. We did hear from the NATO, from NATO secretary saying that if Putin uses the chemical weapon, that will be the red line. But I'm sorry, but that is just not something I believe the West should stand for, saying that, okay, 100 death is bad, but we're not gonna do something about that. 2000 death in Mariupol are bad, Putin bad guy, we're gonna introduce some sanctions, but you know, we'll see, we don't want to escalate. But then chemical weapon, then we are gonna intervene. Like, I want to hear the exact number of people that need to die before the West says, okay, that is too much. Because I, frankly speaking, do believe that, you know, every life should matter. And the fact that now the West is saying that there is like a certain number of deaths that can be forgiven, is that what really the Western civilization is about? I really don't think so. So I really hope that the West will stop being in denial and will accept the scary reality and will fight back. Every time the West doesn't, it only leads to worse consequences.
What some call an expanded war, others, of course, call a World War III scenario. Is it something you feel is inevitable at this point?
I think that we should do what is under our control, and that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that within our control, I mean, Ukraine is doing what is, you know, what is possible for us to do. The West isn't. And now claiming that we are not doing this or doing that because we want to avoid World War III. Well, if Putin wants a World War III, he will make up a reason to go into World War III. Again, scary, but true. Like, he doesn't need a reason. Like, he didn't need a reason to attack Ukraine. Like, it's not like we did something wrong. You know, it's not like we were trying to attack him or something like that. So, again, scary, but true. Like, if Putin wants to go into, you know, attack other countries, he will do that. He doesn't need a reason. But I also think that many, many people among Russian elites don't want the World War III. And now there is a chance to, persuade them. Well, persuade is the wrong word, but just force their hands into stopping this disaster about to come. And in order to do that, we need much, much stricter sanctions. And also, fighting back here on the ground. And I also believe that at some point after a certain number of deaths of Russian soldiers here in Ukraine, and Ukrainian army is now speaking about 12,000 Russian soldiers dead in 2 weeks, 12,000. That is a huge number. even for a country as huge as Russia, even for a country as disrespectful of human lives as Russia, it's still a huge number. So I think that should have an impact on the Russian society, with the mothers and fathers saying, like, we are not sending our sons to die there in Ukraine. There should be a way to stop him. But we're not using those ways to stop him. We're just, you know, letting him grab another part of the another country and saying, like, we don't want to touch him because we don't want to escalate. Like, he can grab the whole of Ukraine, and the West will say, like, we don't want to escalate. Like, you know, there was this saying from the World War II, like, first they came for Jewish people, I said nothing. Then they came for the gays, and I said nothing. Then they came for communists, and I said nothing. And then they came for me, and there was nobody to protect me anymore because they have taken everybody else. I'm not sure about the correct, like, the wording exactly, but that's the whole idea. People who believe in the same values should stand together.
You have I think it's a fairly new post on your Twitter, introduce NATO no-fly zone over Ukraine. I mean, do you see any more discussion on that? I mean, as critical as that is at this point?
Well, we did hear Biden announcing some military help to Ukraine that will include some air defense system, but not the jets. Well, that's something, but we also really need the jets. Like, the jets are crucial, and that's what I'm hearing from the army. They're all saying that air defense system are okay, but we actually need the jets as well, because the Russians do have so much much more jets than we do, and they can continue just bombarding the country, even if they, like, withdraw all of their troops, like 100% of their troops, they will just randomly bombard the country. Like, and there wouldn't be much that we would be able to do about that. So, yeah, we need the some way of ensuring the no-fly zone. Otherwise, it will be they can continue bombarding us. Even if we win on the ground, if we kill, like, all of them, which is a nice scenario. I like the idea. But even in that case, like, there is nothing to stop them from continuing bombarding our cities. And, like, every day we're getting news, like, because I think the international media are only getting... the big news, the big hits, but there are, like, bombs falling down every day. Like, 3 people died here, 4 people died here, 2 children died here. That has not been reported that much because it's also kind of, well, smaller number of casualties, but if you add that up, that is huge. We already have I think 90 confirmed death of children. Half of them, at least, are in airstrikes. So we are going to need that anyways, like, regardless of how the war on the ground proceeds.
Last question I had. I know you said last time, of course, Parliament is, you know, obviously there's not in session, of course, with everything going on. I mean, are there any emergency meetings that could come up? I mean, is there any action that Parliament could possibly take it this time? Sure. Yep.
Sorry, I need to. Yeah, I forgot to shut down the windows because we are not allowed to have the lights on during the evening. Yeah, the parliament is working. There is discussion that we might be having an emergency session sometime soon, but the date is to be decided. Okay. So there are some issues that we need to take care of, like cutting down the taxes for gas, because the gas prices have gone up so much, like confiscation of Russian-owned property here in Ukraine. And then some other issues that like related to the military situation here. The agenda is still being discussed, and I think as soon as we agree on the agenda, we shall have understanding of when this session will take place.
Okay. Well, Inna Sifson, thank you so much for all of your time and the updates here. I hope you're obviously staying safe. I can't imagine what it's like for you. I mean, you're doing these interviews and do you have to kind of look at the sky too sometimes and worry? I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, what every moment is like for you all there.
I just wish everyone listening to this would just, it's extremely painful. And I feel angry every day that like my life as it was taken from me and from all other Ukrainians. We had our lives like better or worse, but we were like people who, I was deciding on what I want to do in my life. And now I can't go for a run. I cannot see my son. I cannot see my boyfriend. I cannot do anything. I can get my hair done, which is stupid, but still like I cannot get my hair done because no, like nothing is functioning here in Kiev. So my life as it was, I'm not living in my apartment after all. Mm. So my life as it was like in 3 weeks is just completely gone. And that is unacceptable. This cannot be happening. This is extremely scary and frustrating and makes people angry more and more. Like he has no right just to destroy or change the lives of 40 million people just because one crazy guy in Kremlin decided to do so. And also the world shouldn't be just looking at this and saying like, oh, we don't want to escalate. So, all
right. Thank you so much for your time.